Welcome to the Capital News. I'm your host, Alex Kritis. Today is Tuesday, April 6th, 2021. Thank you so much for joining me. Hope you're all doing well out there today. Title of today's podcast, U.S. Taxpayers Bail Out the World. Now, this should come as no surprise with all of the spending that Uncle Sam has just been throwing out the window day after day, week after week, month after month, and now year after year. With multi-trillion dollar deficits at the federal level, our national deficit, obviously creating trillions more to our national debt, but also our trade deficit, which is hitting all-time records as well. And deficit is a negative number, not a good thing. These are all direct and indirect bailouts, not just of industry in this country, but for industry in other countries. Because if we have such large trade deficits, that means we're not producing the stuff. That means we're importing the stuff. So somebody else in another country, is doing the production. And it is production and savings and capital formation and innovation and productivity that generates true economic growth. So while we have growing twin deficits, again, our trade deficit combined with our national federal budget deficit are increasing so that we can evidently bail out the rest of the world, so the rest of the world can grow at the expense of the United States. And of course, we're flipping the bill. This is just like what our Treasury Secretary, Janet Dingbat Yellen, just did. Basically unilaterally giving $650 billion, with a B, $650 billion, U.S. taxpayer money, to the International Monetary Fund, the IMF. She didn't have to go to Congress. It was below the threshold, where she didn't have to go to Congress to seek their approval or their advice or their consent. She wants to do it. She evidently has the authority to do it and did it. $650 billion. A little bit of context as to what that means. During the great financial crisis, the GFC, we came up with this thing called TARP, the Troubled Asset Relief Program. You remember that? $700 billion. We came up with TARP to save the financial system from financial and economic ruin. Now, they just pulled the number out of you-know-where, but it had to be a big number. And 13 years ago, they were afraid to say trillion. Now we say trillion like we're handing out pieces of candy. It's nothing. So, a decade ago, 13 years ago, people are gasping. Democrats and Republicans both were outraged at a number so big, $700 billion, to presumably bail out the financial industry because they were scared to death. They were frightened by the quote-unquote experts in the white lab jackets, the Ben Bernankes of the time, the Treasury Secretary Hank Paulson at the time. And of course, Janet Yellen was still running around too. And Timothy Geithner, another former Treasury Secretary under Obama. All the same players, all the same names. It's a revolving door down there. Basically, bipartisan support. At least initially, knee-jerk reaction. Oh, we're not doing this. We're not bailing out these industries. We're not doing this. We're definitely not appropriating $700 billion. That's way too much. But they, of course, ended up doing it at the end of the day. But I just want to provide this context. $700 billion was presumably enough to save us from the great financial crisis, or to be at least a big chunk of what was going to help us. And now, our Treasury Secretary is giving $650 billion to other countries. That's what the IMF is. That's who they're representing. Poorer and middle-income countries with our tax dollars. Did you vote for this? Did your congressman or senator give you a call? Did they send you an email or a letter asking for your approval on this? No, of course not. Of course not. They didn't even get an email or a letter from Janet Yellen. They didn't. She did because she didn't have to give it to them. So there's another $650 billion out the door. So we're going to have to borrow another $650 billion just to make that up so we have the cash in our treasury. That's how this works. But don't worry, according to Secretary Yellen, it's a wash. You don't have to worry about it because we're going to make money by giving this money to the IMF. And yes, of course, we're going to have borrowing costs for the new treasuries that we're going to have to issue. But it'll be a wash. What we get from those other countries will pay for what we have to pay out to some other institution, namely the Federal Reserve. Because nobody wants our debt, because it's junk. It's junk. And with what these morons and idiots are doing on a daily basis, no wonder it's junk. I don't say that tongue-in-cheek when I go through market performance and I say, okay, on to bonds, Uncle Sam's 10-year junk note. I'm not saying that to be a wise guy. I'm saying that because that's what it is. It's junk. It's garbage. And I want to talk about the coming bankruptcies, and I want to talk about the high-yield market, the junk bond market, in relation to the treasury market. Okay, so we're going to get to that. And the other interesting thing, and, you know, is this a coincidence or do we not believe in coincidences? Because, so we have these, again, the $650 billion out the door to the IMF. And lo and behold, the IMF comes out now with a report increasing their forecasts for global growth. They get a $650 billion freebie, courtesy of the U.S. taxpayer. And they issue another report. We are revising our forecast. And we're revising it upward. And I don't have the report in front of me. I honestly couldn't care less. I think they're projecting the U.S. GDP somewhere around 6%. But when you have a printing press and that's all you do is beg, borrow, and print, yeah, and you understand the arithmetic calculation of GDP, no surprise. Okay, I'm not going to be surprised if it hits it. I'm not going to be surprised if it doesn't. It's all a joke. It's all a game. It's all smoke and mirrors. Understand this. That's the most important piece of the story. It's all a joke. But I guess that's all you have to do. You want things to look rosier? Give an organization $650 billion, and they'll write whatever type of report you want them to write. That's how easy it is, assuming you can get your hands on $650 billion. So that's important because this also ties into some of the situations that I have been forecasting, I guess we could say, and have been for the past couple of years, namely social unrest due to political corruption and due to economic corruption and poor economic policy making. Well, what this $650 billion does is this kicks the can down the road. That's a ton of money. Now, yes, we live in the world in the land of trillions and trillions of dollars, but $650 billion is still quite a bit of cash, okay? So don't fool yourself on that. Now, obviously, I am still predicting and forecasting global unrest. I hope I'm wrong about this, by the way, but also I think it's needed because a lot of these politicians and policymakers that are at the helm in one country after the next, they're not going away. They think they're gods. They think they're saviors. They think they can do no wrong. They're narcissistic. They're sociopathic. They're psychopathic. Spin a globe, put your finger on a country, you probably have that problem. East, west, north, south does not make a difference. Just the varying levels of degree. That's all the difference is going to be. So they see no wrong, these policymakers and politicians around the globe, but they're hugely problematic. And we've gone through the data, we've gone through the scenarios, Myanmar, military coup, they're on the verge of civil war, etc., etc. We know the weakest links that have been crumbling are crumbling in the process of crumbling. But nonetheless, if you're going to throw $650 billion at the problem, you are going to buy yourself some time. So net-net, I'm still with the social unrest, the uprisings, etc., etc. But this $650 billion is going to go a little way in sort of pushing some of that off. Because if you could imagine these poor and middle-income countries not being able to pay their debt, which was going to happen, absent this gift from U.S. taxpayers of $650 billion, well, you would have seen a lot of political tension. You would have seen snap elections, you would have seen coups, you would have seen more civil unrest, protests, riots, no question about it. Now, again, I still think those things are going to happen, but maybe now just a little bit longer than what I would have anticipated. So that's big news. That is big news. And of course, that doesn't catch most of the headlines now, does it? No, you have to be focused on Dr. Seuss, Mr. Potato Head, kings and queens and princesses who aren't happy. They're crying inside of a castle. Now the shenanigans with the Georgia voting law here in the United States, and Major League Baseball, another major sports organization, is moving their All-Star game, which was scheduled to be in Georgia. Well, they don't like this Georgia voting law, so they are moving their All-Star game to another state, I think Colorado. I couldn't care less. These corporations, these sports agencies, these sports leagues, they better be careful. They're on thin ice, trying to act all quote-unquote woke, feeling like they know everything, feeling like they are supposed to be social justice warriors or whatever the hell that means. They're on thin ice. And this is just going to get worse. This is the merger of corporations and the state, which of course is already in existence, but this is further consolidation, which is what this whole this whole scheme of lockdowns and restrictions has been about. It's all it is. It is a big merger between big government and big business. Why do you think big business has been deemed essential and small and mid-sized firms have been deemed non-essential? How insulting. Essential, non-essential. That is your livelihood. That is your blood, sweat, and tears. That is your time away from your family to support your family. And these idiots have the audacity to come on the news day after day, night after night, and saying, you are non-essential. And people continue to buy it because this is a Milgram experiment and it is only getting worse. And I hate saying that, but that's what it is. So let's get to some market performance and we'll start to weave in and out of everything else that I've just mentioned with the IMF, what Joe Biden is talking about, some student debt forgiveness that's making the headlines again, and of course some bankruptcies and all this other crap that we have to contend with on a day-by-day basis. So the dollar index is at 92.32, some further weakness with respect to the dollar. Not a lot of movement right now in the overnight session with respect to the Forex markets. Overnight futures trading the major indexes for the U.S., Dow Jones, the S&P 500, and the NASDAQ 100 are all relatively flat at the moment. The cash trade in Japan is putting on a little gain of about 0.1%. Pretty much a sea of green across the board, across the pond in Europe today. The biggest gainer was the UK exchange, the FTSE 100, putting on a gain of about 1.3%. Cash trade in Australia is putting on a current gain of about 0.5%. Chinese stocks are currently down. We have WTI catching a little bid today, $59.66. Brent also catching a bid, $63.10 a barrel. Some of this may have been off of the reports that came across the news wires about another disruption within the Suez Canal. I know, you can't make this crap up. Nothing like last time. It's been resolved. Maybe these things happen more frequently, but now people are, you know, on high alert if something takes place in the Suez Canal. But nonetheless, that's what came across the news wires that led to a little bit of an increase there with oil prices. Natural gas, $2.46. Gold and silver had a decent day, but both are currently down overnight, 0.25%. Gold, $1,739 an ounce. Silver, $25.11 per ounce. Copper still hanging on, $4.10 per pound. And say it with me, Uncle Sam's 10-year junk note is yielding 1.66%. So there you have it with some market performance. Now, again, getting back to the $650 billion bailout to the IMF to assist those poor and middle-income countries, you have to pay attention, obviously, to the commodity market, because for these poorer nations, that is their lifeblood. They are not well-diversified economies. A lot of programs that exist within those countries that come from the government, government transfer payments, government subsidies, quote-unquote free stuff that people have grown accustomed to, that is able to be financed because commodity prices are at a certain price that allows these countries to run their budgets so they can, quote-unquote, afford to give people within their countries subsidized rates, quote-unquote free stuff, what have you. And because these countries are typically not well-managed, because they are not diversified, they are basically handcuffed. They are hamstrung by whatever the price of a particular commodity might be. Now, generally speaking, that's usually oil or natural gas. It's the energy markets that are really the lifeblood for a lot of these nations. And because they are weaker nations, and because they are poorly managed in most instances, are these prices high enough to justify the current outlays that these countries budget for to take care of their people the best that they can? Or at least to give them stuff to make it appear that they're doing the best that they can. And for most countries, the answer is no. Prices are not at sufficient levels enough to sort of keep a lid on hostilities or any other type of economic or political weakness. So that's why these countries are in dire straits. That's why these countries have just been given a gift, a bailout of $650 billion. I am not the only one that sees this, ladies and gentlemen. I am not the only one that knows this. Our government knows this. Janet Yellen knows this. Jay Powell, the chair of the Federal Reserve, knows this. They are afraid of a dollar doom loop scenario. They are afraid of sovereign defaults, which is very likely what would have happened without this miraculous gift from the U.S. taxpayer of $650 billion, of which we gave no consent to whatsoever. But they don't care about us. They don't care about us. They don't care about us. Leave the two-party system immediately if you haven't already. So you have to understand how everything is connected. You have to understand what was coming down the pike. And what was coming down the pike were defaults by some of these countries around the world, these poor and middle-income nations. Couldn't do it. They don't have the dollar reserves to pay it off. They don't have the cash coming into their economies because commodity prices, even though oil has been going up, is still not high enough for them to have a balanced budget and to continue offering their people the same level of goods and services that they have been attempting to do for the past several years. And that has been a trigger point for so many of the protests and riots that we have witnessed since 2019. The slightest increase to a tax, the slightest of increases to an increase in diesel or gasoline prices, or to get on the metro, or to take a bus. Just the slightest of increases was enough to get people out onto the streets, protesting and rioting and demanding change. That's how fragile this system is. That's all it takes. People are sick and tired of being sick and tired. They can't afford to live. And all of this is actually just making it worse. At the end of the day, it's kicking the can down the road. It's shielding the policymakers who have implemented all of this craziness. It shields them from some responsibility and accountability for the time being. And they get to look like the good guy. Janet Yellen gets to look like the savior because she just gave $650 billion away. But don't worry, it's a wash. Don't worry about the housing crisis. It's not going to be a housing crisis. Don't worry about the subprime market. It's not going to be contagious. It's not going to make its way into other parts of the economy. Don't worry about it. This is what these idiots said, okay? They're on record. This is what they said. Now they tell us inflation isn't going to be a threat. If it is, it's only going to be transitory. We're supposed to believe them. Got a bridge to sell you if you believe these people. What else do I want to talk about briefly before I get to some of the bankruptcy stuff? Oh, yeah. President Biden was out today giving a speech. Of course, it was off the teleprompter. Answered a couple of questions, nothing major. But wanted to talk about an update with COVID-19, the vaccinations. We're above, we're beating our metrics, yada, 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 patting himself on the back. But saying that's the good news. The bad news, however, is we are seeing an increase in new variants. So the virus, of course, is mutating, and so these new strains are becoming of concern. We're seeing an increase in cases, he says, an increase in hospitalizations. Even though we're seeing a decrease in deaths, we're still seeing, again, those increases in cases and hospitalizations in some states, and that, of course, is not a good thing. So this is your Milgram experiment. This is you pushing back and saying, we want to go out. We want the lockdowns and restrictions lifted and removed. We want things to go back to as much normality as possible, even though normality wasn't that normal, wasn't that good. But nonetheless, it's better than being locked up all day. And you got the guy in the white lab coat, this time it's President Biden, coming out and saying, no, you can't stop the experiment. We have to keep doing it. And the reason we have to keep doing it is because there are new variants. So you sit down and you crank the dial, you push the button, and you be good little boys and girls. That's all this is. That's all it is. And believe me, they're going to continue to push the vaccines. It's new. They don't have the long-term data on this. So don't be surprised, even if you've taken both shots, that you're going to have to take them again. Because maybe the thing wears off in 6 months. You got to take a flu shot every year. So why is this going to be any different? So just be on the lookout for that. They're going to continue to push for more and more vaccines. And the Prime Minister of Israel, Benjamin Netanyahu, is already making that remark. He's already pushing. You're going to have to get jabbed again, again, and again, and again. Okay? So just, hey, you want to trust these people, be my guest. That's your decision. And then lastly, before we get to some of the bankruptcy stuff, student debt forgiveness. So that's back there on some of the headlines. Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer, Democrat out of the state of New York, is once again pushing this pretty hard. And he wants student debt to be forgiven up to $50,000. That is an astronomical amount. This is basically my breaking point if they go along with this. Reportedly, President Biden is pushing back on at least the figure of $50,000. Maybe he'll tolerate $10,000 or something like this or that. Chuck Schumer wants to claim that the president has the authority under the Constitution to just wipe this debt away. That's completely ridiculous. Completely ridiculous. I mean, we have student debt that's about $1.7 trillion right now. $1.7 trillion. That's outrageous. It's outrageous. But guess what that'll be? That'll be another bailout via U.S. taxpayers to people who entered into an agreement to take on that debt, to receive an education, to go out and to start a career. Hey, there are risks involved with this, pal. I am not here to bail you out because you didn't understand the terms of the contract. That's not how this works in this country. If somebody's net worth increases by $50,000, my net worth is going to increase by $50,000. And you're more than welcome to get in line with me. Because that's what that means. You wipe somebody's debt away, their net worth goes up by that amount. Very simple. Your assets minus your liabilities, your debts, equals your net worth. You wipe it away, their net worth just went up. Well, guess what? Mine will too. I made sacrifices. I paid off my student loans, as did so many other people in this country. And now they have to bail out those who said, oh, I didn't understand. I can't find a job. I can't do this. I can't do that. It's just so wrong. They can't do this. I can't get ahead. That's your problem. I don't know what you want me to tell you. That's not how it works in this country. But they'll probably end up doing something. They'll probably end up doing something. And then the quote-unquote infrastructure bill, I guess the Senate parliamentarian has ruled that the Senate can push parts of it through, at least parts of it through, through budget reconciliation. So all it's going to take is a simple majority, which if all of the Democrats get in line, then the hyena, the Vice President of the United States, can laugh her way up to Capitol Hill and press the final vote to make it 51-50. Now, that assumes that the Democrats can all get on board. Right now, there's a little bit of pushback. This is political jockeying. And if you're a politician, hey, that's what you're going to do. So somebody like Senator Manchin out of West Virginia, which is obviously a pretty conservative Republican state, but nonetheless a Democratic senator, he has some political leverage here. He can say, hey, my constituents aren't going to take too kindly to all of this government spending, but if you give me, meaning my state of West Virginia, a little extra this or a little extra that, maybe they can look the other way for a little bit. That's the game. That's how it works. That's how it works. Now, of course, if the Democrats had a larger majority, then maybe Joe Manchin wouldn't be a problem. There are a couple other Democrats who are right now against the current state of the bill, but nonetheless, they're likely going to come around eventually, and this thing will most likely pass in some form or another, as we have been stating here for months, even before they formally announced it. They are just getting started, okay? You can argue, you can focus on the circus, you can listen to this talk radio host, that one, this podcast, that news, they are going to pass this. Might be in bits and pieces, but it's coming. Don't kid yourself. On to some of this bankruptcy stuff that we've been talking about. So this is out of Fitch, okay? Fitch Ratings, one of the few major credit rating agencies in the country. Of course, they dropped the ball during the GFC, but I digress. So diverging bankruptcy trends flag SME risk. So small, middle enterprises. Okay, small, medium enterprises. SME bankruptcies are set to rise significantly in 2021 and 2022, but to lower levels than after the global financial crisis. Now, isn't it interesting that the measuring stick that they are using has to be the GFC? So that just tells you how bad things are going to get still. The unique nature of the coronavirus crisis with special measures that have suppressed business failures means visibility on how they normalize is poor. So what they are stating, what Fitch Ratings is stating in that sentence that I just read, is that the Federal Reserve, so monetary and fiscal authorities, stepped in with all of their emergency policies, one facility after the next at the Fed, the Nobody Cares Act at the federal government level, the PPP programs. So what they are basically stating here is that this is a huge distortionary event, which of course we have been mentioning since day one. A faster than expected surge in SME bankruptcies and non-performing loans, NPLs, could tighten credit conditions, weighing on the recovery. There have been far fewer bankruptcies during the coronavirus crisis compared with previous recessions, again, because of said policies, fiscal and monetary, particularly among small businesses. Direct financial support and forbearance measures and interruptions of the bankruptcy process due to social distancing restrictions have artificially depressed bankruptcies. Insolvencies will rise as these measures are phased out. The divergence between U.S. Business Chapter 11 and Chapter 7 filings in 2020 suggests a backlog of failures for smaller firms. Chapter 11 filings by corporates increased in contrast to a fall in Chapter 7 commercial liquidations, which tend to be SME-dominated, although large and small firms can use both options. The fall in SME failures in 2020 is at odds with the rise in high-yield bond defaults. I'll repeat, the fall in small SME failures in 2020 is at odds with the rise in high-yield bond defaults. SME bankruptcies will rise, potentially significantly, once restrictions, policy support, and forbearance are scaled back. Do you get it? This is one of the, I have to say, one of the most succinct paragraphs that has been written on this topic. And I am so glad that Fitch, of all business, of all corporations, put this out. This should carry a lot of weight. This is only a week old. This note is only a week old. SME bankruptcies will rise potentially significantly once restrictions and policy support are scaled back or removed. Do you understand why the Federal Reserve wants to continue to pump $120 billion per month into the system via quantitative easing? Do you get it? Do you understand why Yellen is dishing out $650 billion to the rest of the world? Do you get it? Do you understand why Joe Biden and company and the Trump administration too were throwing trillions of dollars out the window? Do you get it? They do not want their experiment to blow up in their face. And that is exactly what is supposed to happen. But they do not want to take responsibility. They do not want to be held to account for it. And we have no politician with a spine that stands up and looks these people in the face and calls them to the floor on it. Not a one. Not a Republican, not a Democrat. They love it. They love it. Because that means they don't have to go back to their states, their towns, their districts, and look their constituents in the eye and say, well, you're going to have to tighten your belt buckle. We're going to have to go through some austerity. All of these corporations that we're keeping afloat, yeah, they shouldn't be in business. They're zombies. They are stealing. They are saturating future growth and prosperity just so we can say that the businesses are still standing. They're not managed well. They're losing money. But hey, they're still open, right? At least for the time being. SME bankruptcies will rise potentially significantly. That's why they keep pushing one quote-unquote stimulus package after the next. Nobody Cares Act 1, 2, and 3.0. A $1.4 trillion spending bill just to keep the lights on, passed last December. Another $1.9 trillion piece of crap, Nobody Cares Act 3.0 that was just passed. Another $2 to $4 trillion quote-unquote infrastructure spending bill. And presumably, perhaps, more stimulus checks that might go out in the interim. They are trapped. They know it. These markets are greatly distorted. And I'm running a little long here, a little over 30 minutes right now. I like to keep these to 30 minutes, obviously. So I'm going to save some of that other analysis with respect to high yields, where those rates currently are, and the 10-year. I'm going to save that for tomorrow. And I'm also going to bring back some of the jobs report data, too. I mentioned yesterday during the March Jobs Report podcast, we were going to take a look at some broader jobs data within that report and outside of that report. So maybe we'll just do another data dump for tomorrow's podcast, unless something else transpires. But I think that'll be interesting. You're going to see why I have been saying for quite a while that Uncle Sam's 10-year junk note is junk. And we'll compare it to where high yield or junk bonds currently sit. So there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. Pat yourselves on the back. U.S. taxpayers are bailing out the world. Stay diversified, stay vigilant, and stay with the Capital News. I am Alex Caritas. Godspeed.